Great to have you with us. Welcome back to A Closer Look. I'm Dennis O'Hare.
And I'm Rose Scott. Dennis, tomorrow is the self-imposed deadline for a deal in the talks about Iran's nuclear program. Now, the Iranians are negotiating with the U.S., other European nations, Russia, and China. They're trying to reach an agreement for a lifting of those economic sanctions in exchange for limits on Iran's nuclear program.
Now, earlier this month, you might remember, 47 Republican U.S. senators sent an open letter to Iran's leadership warning that any deal with the Obama administration that doesn't receive congressional approval could be changed or even voided by a future president or Congress. And one of the Republican senators who signed that letter was Georgia's Johnny Isaacson. He joins us now. And Senator, welcome back to A Closer Look. Good to have you.
Good to be with you, Dennis.
As we speak, the Iranians are, well, we're in the last minute negotiations up to that deadline, and they're reported to be resisting proposals which set how long they'll be restricted from research and development for things like advanced centrifuges. And there's also the issue on whether their stockpiles of enriched uranium would be shipped out of the country so they couldn't build nuclear weapons. Now, the U.S. and the Europeans for the moment appear to be holding firm. Are you satisfied that at this point the administration is resisting the terms that would make it easier for Iran to develop nuclear weapons?
There's been so little communication from the administration to the Senate that I'm concerned and disturbed about what I don't know, which is almost everything. In fact, Dennis, if the 47 of us had not sent an open letter to the leadership of Iran, I doubt you'd have heard what you've heard the last 30 days in the media about the Iranian negotiations, because it was being done in total silence without us or the press or anybody in America knowing. So because there's no transparency, and I understand you can't negotiate a deal in total transparency, I respect that. But when you start talking about a nuclear-armed Iran, you start talking about lifting sanctions, you start talking about a Middle East that's in turmoil already, it ought to be very open to the American people and the American Senate what the president's negotiating.
But with that letter, there have been some criticisms in the days since that it actually strengthened Iran's negotiating position, especially when it came to things like what we've just talked about, future enrichment and centrifuges. So any second thoughts by either you or others in the caucus about, if nothing else, the publicity and timing of the letter?
Only that we should have done it sooner.
Meaning what?
Meaning that because there was no communication and no transparency, if we'd written the letter sooner, we might have had more information earlier about the negotiations that were going on. I just fear that we're going to make a bad deal for the sake of making a deal, and I think the lack of transparency with the Senate is a good example of that, that may be the case.
But didn't the Iranians, to give them credit for some intelligence, know that something like this might happen? And didn't that allow them to take positions that they were planning to take?
I don't understand that argument. I don't know how any at all transparency with the American people who elected President Obama gives the Iranians a stronger hand. It's just the opposite. It gives the president a stronger hand.
Senator Isaacson, if there is no deal, but won't Iran go ahead with its program, I mean, without any inspections or supervisions and sanctions or not?
We've dealt in the Middle East with Saddam Hussein before where there were inspections and sanctions and weren't inspections and weren't in sanctions. And if you have an unreliable or an untrustworthy partner in a treaty or a deal, you have an unresponsive partner. And I'm afraid that's what we would have in Iran. But we've got to make sure if we make a deal that the inspections and the sanctions are so tight that they can't wiggle their way out from under them.
What would you say to some who say that maybe the GOP senators really don't want any deal with Iran?
I would say they're dead wrong. That subject never came up.
Senator, here's part of the problem in all of this, and it's the complexity of it all. Don't we have to have some kind of relationship with Iran? Because in the rest of the region, the U.S. and Iran are at least on the same side, if you will, in opposing ISIS advances in Syria on the one hand, and then on the other hand, Iran is supporting rebels in Yemen that the U.S. opposes. So don't we have to keep talking at some level here?
Well, it's always good to have communications and always good to have talk. It's always good to have transparency. It's not good to make a deal that somebody else abuses to your detriment. And what you just made a case of exactly makes my case. I mean, the Iranians are fighting the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant in terms of ISIL, and then they're fighting with the rebels against Yemen. They're on two sides of two different battles and two sides of battles that we're involved in. I mean, they're a major player in the disruption that's taking place in the Middle East while we're negotiating a nuclear deal. That's a very difficult environment. And, you know, when you're negotiating with somebody for peaceful purposes, it'd be nice if they were at peace themselves.
What makes you think that the administration would cut a deal that would allow what everyone agrees is a dangerous nation like Iran to have the freedom to develop a nuclear program?
Well, that's like me asking you what makes you think that because we wrote that letter, it gave Iran a stronger hand. That's not why we did it, and that's not why we're doing what we're doing today.
Senator Isaacson, you mentioned Yemen. At the same time, Iran is supporting rebel forces in Yemen, and the Arab League has agreed to put its own military force together to fight them. So is it time to put, I guess, American forces on the ground anywhere in the Middle East?
Is that a question or a statement?
No, sir. It's a question, sir.
Is it time?
Yes, sir.
Well, it's past time that we confronted ISIL. As I said in many interviews, including one with Dennis before, the only way you're ever going to defeat ISIL is to kill them. And the only way you're ever going to do that is to put boots on the ground in concert with the other nations and in concert with air power. The quicker we do it, the quicker we'll have more opportunity for peace in the Middle East. The later we wait, we've run the risk of having a spreading war around with ISIL spreading around outside the Levant and outside the Maghreb, maybe even entire shores or to Europe, and that's a dangerous thing.
But do we know at this point, or do you and the Republican caucus have any feeling about timetable, what kinds of forces, how many?
Well, the timetable, time is of the essence in dealing with ISIL, and the longer you wait, the more difficult it's going to be. So that's the timetable. It's waiting is not the right formula. In terms of the amount of manpower, quite frankly, Dennis, you need special operations types of forces. We've known for some time that fighting in the Middle East, that you have special operations type forces like we used in Afghanistan and toward the end of the conflict in Iraq, used in Iraq. The numbers are not nearly as important as the expertise. You can have all the airplanes and all the bombs being dropped in the world, but if you don't have human eyes on the ground to tell you where those targets need to be hit and where the leadership is, you're never going to be totally effective in terms of an air war. So whatever it takes, it may take 2,500, it may take 10,000, they may be American, they may be Saudi. The fact of the matter is the world is quickly learning that the Middle East is spiraling into chaos, and the quicker we get ISIL out, that's one movement towards a solution.
You mentioned special forces. Do we have enough of them to handle something like ISIS in a very complex region like Syria, while at the same time, of course, being ready for whatever other threats might come up around the world?
Well, the only answer I can give you to that is it took 12 people and two helicopters to find Osama bin Laden in Pakistan and take him out without anybody ever knowing they were there. So the numbers are not nearly as important as the expertise.
We're speaking with Georgia Republican Senator Johnny Isaacson, and we'll shift gears in just a moment. We'll come back with some more on Veterans Affairs, the ongoing investigation into troubles at the VA, and a stalled sex trafficking bill in the Senate, talking with Georgia's senior Republican Senator Johnny Isaacson. Senator, you're the chair of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, and there's a hearing today out in Tomah, Wisconsin, about possible prescription drug abuse at the VA center in that area. There was a report which apparently the VA inspector general didn't want revealed at first, which showed a culture of fear among employees at the center and a high rate of prescriptions for high-dose opiates like morphine. And they're also looking into some deaths at that medical center. Is Tomah an exception, or do you think it's part of a larger VA problem?
The overprescription of opiates is a problem nationwide, and it's not limited to Tomah, Wisconsin. It's not limited to the VA. It's all over the country. To let you know how bad the situation is, there were enough opiates prescribed last year in America for one American in six to have a year's supply. That's 15% of the population, and that's a very powerful painkiller and an addictive narcotic. So this is a reflection of a problem that's nationwide, not just in the VA. But Tomah was a prime example, it appears, from everything. We had a hearing in Washington Thursday in the Senate, and Jeff Miller, the chairman of the House Committee, is in Tomah today to further the investigation, where the overprescription of opiates for those with mental health problems, PTSD and TBI, was way over the pale and way beyond the pale, and the interaction of those drugs and certain other drugs put people's lives in danger. So it's very definitely something we should shine the light on and get some reform in.
And Senator, based on what you've just said, are you in favor then of the Atlanta VA and maybe other Georgia VA hospitals being examined for this abuse?
Well, I think everybody should be. In fact, this is a good time to give you some breaking news. This has been such a concern nationwide that CDC has undertaken a study, which will be completed in December, where they're going to make recommendations to every medical facility, prescribing doctor, and pharmacy in the country on the best protocols and safest protocols for even prescribing or dispensing opiates. It's a nationwide problem. There should be transparency everywhere, the pharmaceutical industry, the physicians, the hospitals, and the providers as well, VA, non-VA alike.
Senator, we understand you're very short of time here, but I just wanted to get a quick answer on an admittedly complicated question. There's a human trafficking bill that stalled in the Senate over a provision that would limit the use of money in a special victims fund, use of money to pay for abortions. Is there a chance that this can be worked out because it's holding up some other things like the nomination of the new attorney general?
Well, I think, and this is underline the word think, I think it's working out. I mean, when the House passed out the SGR fix on Thursday night of last week, that language was included in the House version, which means the Democrats in the House all agreed with that language. So I doubt if that language is going to continue to inhibit the passage of the human trafficking bill. And human trafficking is a major, major problem in America, and it's something we should be addressing.
And do you have any idea when we might see a final version of that bill?
I would think the week we come back is my guess, if not the week after the week we come back.
Georgia Republican Senator Johnny Isaacson. Senator, thanks so much for giving us this time. We appreciate it, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
Best to you both, Dennis.
Thank you, Senator.
Thanks so much.